Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage from around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district, right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
It's another Wednesday, and with another passing week almost coming to an end, it's time for another new edition of Listen In with KNN. Now, today's show will bring you sports like none other as I welcome in Mr. Jerry Brewer to the show. And with that, it means it's time to sit back, relax, and get ready to listen in and follow along with the conversation using hashtag ListenInWithKNN.
It's time to recognize those individuals that are doing good in the community and making a difference in the sports world. Without further ado, Kelsey presents this week's Do Good Sportsperson Award nominee.
To kick off every single show, it's time for Kelsey's Do Good Sports Organization of the Week. Now, today I'm honoring an organization called Athletes for Hope. They're being awarded for helping to foster relationships between athletes and charities across all causes. Their athletic charity helps generate new resources and advocacy for organizations. So basically what they do is why I started my Do Good Award, awarding all the good that's coming from athletes in and out of sports. Athletes for Hope is a nonprofit organization founded in 2007 by some names you might have heard: Andre Agassi, Muhammad Ali, Lance Armstrong, Ward Dunn, Jeff Gordon, Mia Hamm, Tony Hawk, Andre Jagger, Jackie Joyner-Kersee, Mario Luminex, Alonzo Mourning, and Cal Ripken Jr. So yes, pretty much some of the biggest names that have ever graced sports. Athletes for Hope has grown from its original founders to over 4,000 athletes across many sports leagues, including the NBA, NFL, NHL, MLB, and the Olympic movements. Yes, no league left out, almost, it seems like, right? These athletes take part in their Causeway program, which provides education workshops and one-on-one guidance for each athlete through their personal philanthropic journey. Now, their mission is to educate, encourage, and assist athletes in their efforts to contribute to community and charitable causes, to increase public awareness of those efforts, and to inspire others to do the same. So congratulations once again to Athletes for Hope for earning honors this week as Kelsey's Do Good Sports Organization of the Week. There is still a whole lot of show left as we will welcome today's special guest onto the show after this quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
Jerry's Burger Spot has all your Friday night tailgating favorites. From their never-frozen burger, fresh-cut fries, ice cream, and milkshakes, Jerry's Burger Spot offers the best lunch. And if you desire a fresh handmade burger or some delicious ice cream like Mom used to make, stop by Jerry's Burger Spot at 3815 Jefferson Park Road, Prince George, Virginia, right off 36 near Fort Lee. Jerry's Burger Spot. Remember when...
Welcome back to Listen In with KNN on Fox Sports Radio, 96.9 FM and 1340 AM, the sports sound of the district and beyond. It's now time to welcome a true sports guru, Washington Post sports columnist, Mr. Jerry Brewer, to the show. Jerry, how are you?
I'm good, Kelsey. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I mean, anytime I get somebody from the Washington Post on my show, it's a good day.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Delighted to have you. So, of course, we know now that you're at the Washington Post, but tell me a little bit, I mean, how did you first get into journalism? And then tell me, what has your journey been like getting to D.C.?
Oh, man, you know, I knew I wanted to be a journalist when I was 15 years old. So I went in a high school media class and met a sports reporter from the New York Times called Thomas, his name was Thomas George. Who covered the NFL for the New York Times. And we became friends. He told me everything I needed to do and think about if I wanted to be a sports writer. And here I am almost 25 years later on the brink of my 40th birthday really haven't realized all my dreams. And I've covered sports just about everywhere. I started in Philadelphia, went to Orlando, Louisville, Seattle, and now in D.C.
Very cool. So tell me, what has been, give me the most challenging part of your job, and then give me your favorite part of the job.
You know, I mean, for me as a sports columnist, I think the most challenging thing is when you have to write difficult things. You know, somebody needs to be fired, or this guy should be traded, or this guy is performing poorly, so you have to rip him. From a human standpoint, those things are always difficult. And if they ever get easy, I think I would have become too callous about the job. So I don't ever want to be that kind of sports writer. It's always fun for me when you're able to just tell a piece of somebody's story that is very personal and intimate, and they trust you, and you do a good job coming through. And then also, the big events are always fun. You know, been to Super Bowls, been to Olympics, right. You know, seeing LeBron, you know, deliver a championship 50 plus years in the making to Cleveland over a Golden State team that no one thought could be beat. Those gigantic moments are always fun to document.
Right. I mean, you've had, obviously, you said, I mean, you've been in this game a long time, and you've seen, you know, so much of the industry, especially on the sports side. So I'm just curious, I mean, tell me in your opinion, I mean, has the sports media landscape really changed for the positive, or do you think we still have ways to go in kind of making it more diverse?
Oh, we still have a ways to go. I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, you know, diversity in so many different aspects, you know, in race and gender, in you know, different regions, all of those things. I think that the business in some ways is better than it's ever been. It's unfortunate that the money is not as readily available as it used to be. And that's been very limiting, and that's been a huge problem for diversity.
Right. I think you said it so well. I mean, I think, of course, we still have a ways to go, but yes, there has been improvements. I mean, Jerry, like I said, I mean, you've been in this a very, very, very long time, and that's why I'm delighted to have you on the show. But before we get into the show, I just wanted to, I mean, is this your ultimate goal? I mean, what's your ultimate goal, or do you think you've kind of reached the pinnacle of your career?
Yeah, it's funny. I never even thought of myself as being a sports columnist at the Post, you know, a job that Michael Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser and so many other great journalists that I've admired over the years have held. So I kind of feel like I'm beyond my dream job in a lot of ways. So I don't know what the future holds for me, other than I still think I can get a lot better. I still got the energy and the hunger. I feel like I'm in the prime of my career the next 10 to 12 to 15 years. So I just want to see how far I can take it, but I don't really have a destination in mind anymore. And that's a great thing, because that just frees me to do the work. I'm not worrying about where I'm going to do it, because I figure I'm going to be here for a good while. I'm just worried about what I'm going to do.
Right. It's all about the journey, and that's what I love about being in sports media. And as you said, I mean, you never knew it would take you to where you are, but then who knows the future? I mean, and with that, Jerry, I want to get into the show, because speaking about the future, I would always like to kick off my show with the Doing It Big and the DMV segment, where I want to do Balling Out with Kells. We're going to focus on basketball in D.C. with a team that you know well now from being a columnist, the Washington Wizards, who currently sit in the fifth spot in the East at 25-19. They sit ahead just of the Heat, the Cavs, the Raptors, and the Celtics. But, you know, we talked about sports columnists. You talked about some of your idols. Well, another former sports columnist, Stephen A. Smith, basically went off on the Washington Wizards on First Take last week, basically calling them garbage after they lost to Utah. And really their record this season against under sub 500 teams. Basically, he said they play up to their competition or they play down to their competition. So before I get any further, I mean, tell me just, I read your column in the Post, but tell me just your overall thoughts on this Washington Wizards team and why we really haven't seen much consistency with them this season.
Yeah, it's been a disappointing season for those who thought, okay, this team won 49 last year. They led in the third quarter of Game 7 in Boston. They're talking about Eastern Conference Finals or bust. You're thinking, okay, how about 50 wins? How about 52? How about maybe even 55 and having a nice, smooth season? especially when you look at the rest of the landscape of the East. The Kyrie Irving trade changed everything for Cleveland and Boston, and those teams are still in an adjustment period. The Wizards have always played well against Toronto, and so you're sitting there thinking of the top four teams in the East. They've got the continuity. They seem like they could be a team that could really take off while these other teams went through an adjustment period. But now we look up, and here it is, the middle of January, and it's the Wizards that are chasing all of those teams. Plus, now you start to throw in how well Miami has played. You start looking at it and saying, can the Wizards really beat Milwaukee and the Greek Freak in a series? They certainly couldn't beat them in two home games over the past week. So,
right.
I think it started with Markieff Morris not being healthy at the start of the year.
Right,
they were a little
lot.
Off kilter. John Wall is disappointing that he's had knee problems after having what was widely hailed as the best offseason of his career.
Right.
But you know what? Even with all the injuries, they have been in a position in which they should be so much better than what they are. I mean, you're talking about a 25-19 team that could easily be 27-17, 28-16, 29-15,
right.
And people would still be talking about all the losses that they had to teams below 500. I mean, you got to take care of business, and there is a professionalism that is lacking with that team in terms of playing with consistent energy and effort night in and night out. And that's highly disappointing.
I mean, I think you said it. I mean, I think that's what DC fans are saying. I mean, they're saying, you know, you go to a Wizards game, the Utah Jazz were limping. I mean, they had so many injuries. It was the team that the Wizards were supposed to beat. And then you talked about how Milwaukee has really been manhandling the Washington Wizards. You just talked about it. They beat them twice. I mean, this past Monday was the latest. It was their second meeting this month. And then, of course, they did lose a close game on January 6th. But Milwaukee was coming off of two straight losses. And, of course, the Wizards were coming off of two straight wins. But, Jerry, I mean, the biggest thing I took from their loss to the Milwaukee Bucks on Monday in the 104-95 loss was that, I mean, in the first half, Jerry, they had 17 turnovers. So you talk about taking care of the ball and taking care of business. I mean, that can't happen. 17 turnovers alone in the first half. Then they ended the game with 24, a season high. And that gave Milwaukee 25 points. I feel like that's kind of the game right there. And then you talked about, of course, John Wall. He had his knee problems, and Markieff Morris. But Markieff Morris is back now, and I feel like he needs to be a bigger contribution. I mean, he only scored 6 points and had 6 rebounds against the Milwaukee Bucks. And then, of course, Gortat, again, another name. I mean, I think it's bad that Bradley Beal was the only Wizard starter that scored in double digits that game. I mean, I think it's really a team effort, and sometimes the whole team is there, sometimes the whole team is not. And something I want to ask you about that your colleague Candace Buckner wrote about was Otto Porter Jr. and some of the criticism he's been drawing after the Wizards' home loss to the Bucks. Tell me, I mean, do you think Otto this season has been a big enough factor for the Washington Wizards, or do you think he has some stepping up to do in order to make that team, you know, higher up in the East that they wanted to be this season?
You know, I don't always look at it as he needs to step up as much as they need to empower him. They need, and when I say they, I think the Wizards have a very subtle star issue at the top of their roster.
Okay.
And not from the standpoint that there's anything wrong with the character of Beal and Wall, and it's not like they're beefing like they have in the past, but I think they've got this antiquated belief of like that there is this structure and we're at the top of the structure, and John always wants to be the big dog and he wants Brad to be the little brother. And then where does that leave Otto? You know, I think they kind of a lot of times, instead of treating Otto like, you know, he has co-ownership of this thing, that he's just there to make shots when it's convenient for them, and they go away from him. And yes, Otto Porter has to be more assertive. And absolutely, I think that that he needs to step up in terms of asserting himself and being vocal and demanding the basketball. But I think they also need to become more of a team where the ball flows freely. You're starting to see too many games now in which you know, the number of shots that John Wall, a true point guard, you know, one of the few guys in the league who can attack and score for himself and really has the court vision to just sit back and do what I call the CP3 thing and just feed people, just 15
great
assists.
Yeah.
I'd like to see, instead of Wall taking 25 shots in some games, I'd like to see more games where he had 15, 16 assists. I'd like to see
getting everyone involved.
Yeah, and John can understand, you can be the best player and not be the leading scorer, not be the guy who takes the most shots. I'd like to see a team in which, you know, it's very clear that the scoring load is on Bradley Beal. And then Wall kind of comes in there second. And I'd like to see them really force the issue and make Otto Porter, say, an 18, 19 point per game guy the rest of the season instead of a guy who gets 13, 14, 15 points. Everything in basketball is subtle, right? It's just a couple possessions here and there that make the difference between winning and losing. And I think part of that is just how you recalibrate your team. You know, now all of a sudden, if Otto Porter has more of an offensive responsibility, if you give a few more, if you let Keith do a little bit more, maybe even another few opportunities for Gortat, all of a sudden you're conserving energy. And in those key moments, maybe you're a better fourth quarter team
right
because John Wall, who I think should be this team's closer in a lot of ways, can just go off. He's got the energy. He can turn it on in the fourth quarter. And it's just things like that. You know, and this team, you know, they hadn't had a problem with turnovers most of the season. And in the last two home games, they're turning it over
right
like crazy, like they
don't know
each other.
Recently.
And it's weird when they play good defense, they really struggle offensively. When they've got the offense going, they play no defense whatsoever. And so it's just, you know, everything about this team needs to stabilize. And more than anything, they need to be about winning. I mean,
right,
I think they're happy being a good team in the NBA. But you know, if you really want to be known for winning, you got to put together those 50 win seasons. And that's something that they have not done. And 46, 47, 48, 49, that's just not going to cut it anymore. The standard is higher, and they have to play to that standard.
Right, right. And I feel like that's what we all expect them to do. And as you said, I mean, this season has been on and off. When they've been good, they've been really good. But then when they've been bad, they've been really bad. I mean, what comes to mind is still that embarrassing loss they had to the Nets. I don't think I can ever get that game out of my head, nor probably can a lot of Washington Wizards fans. But I'm like you. I think it is Otto getting more involved. And, of course, that does start with your point in John Wall. But like you said, I think he also does need to be more aggressive. And they really need to play as a unit. I think, you know, when they play well as a unit together and everyone, as you said, is, you know, assisting and dishing and everyone knows their role, they play really well. But lately, as you said, I mean, last games, it's just like, I mean, who is this Wizards team? And I mean, it seems like they're really looking for an identity the last games. But hopefully they can find it. And hopefully Scott Brooks has some magic, you know, in the locker room and his talk. So we see a different Wizards team. Of course, they will play the Charlotte Hornets tonight. But before I go on, I want to ask you, I mean, Scott Brooks has come out time and time again and said John Wall is the best point guard in the East. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking, because I don't really put Kyrie in that conversation because
okay,
I don't consider Kyrie a true point guard.
Why?
I know
that
he plays the position. So technically, because I mean, Kyrie is not about getting other people involved first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is not his number one goal. He wants to put the ball in the bucket. And
okay,
he's having a great year, and everybody will say he's the best point guard in the East, but he really is a combo guard. But that said, you know, there's a difference between being number one and playing like you're the best. And there's been other guards who play better than John this year. And part of that's the injury, and part of that's just him. I mean, I think that John is trying to prove something he doesn't need to prove right now, probably because he's been injured, and that's leading him to, you know, oh, I want to put up 35 and 11. Well, it's like, okay, that's great, but you also had 8 turnovers. You know, you don't need to be shooting 27 shots in a game. When Otto Porter comes out and scores 9 points in the first quarter and it's hot, and Bradley Beal makes 8 of his first 12 shots. You know,
right.
They're just little things that when you're truly in a good groove and you're just playing for the team, those things don't happen. Again, he's not a selfish player, but I think these guys have thoughts in their heads that aren't just about what they need to do to win that game on that lazy Wednesday night in January. Like they don't understand that those games are going to have a great influence on what happens in the playoffs, because you're ruining your playoff positioning.
Right.
You could have home court advantage and you don't. And just look at it. I mean, what separated the Wizards and the Celtics last year? The Wizards were the 4 seed at 49 wins. The Celtics were the 1 seed at 53 wins. I mean, that's 4 games.
Right. So every game matters.
And if game 7 is in D.C. and not in Boston,
right,
I think it could be a different outcome.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
definitely.
This year, they could be in real trouble. I mean, imagine, let's say, I think they're just destined to play the Bucks in the first round.
Wouldn't
and,
that be something?
You know, maybe that's a 4 or 5 game, and you're the 5 seed, and the Bucks are the 4.
Right.
That's a dogfight. That's probably a 7-game series right there.
Right.
And then you'd have to turn around and play one of the elite teams in the second round if you get that far on the road, you know, without – so I just – they're not thinking about those things that, you know, it's, you beat the Nets, you beat the Lakers, you play a professional game against the Jazz when the Jazz are injured, and you beat the Hornets. You know, those games mean so much in determining whether you're just this mediocre mid-level seed or whether you're one of the top teams in the East. And it just changes your road, because we all know 6, 7, and 8 in the East almost have no chance of winning.
Right. It's hard.
Those teams are going to get wiped in the first round. But the Wizards don't want to – they can't – you know, they're incredibly frustrating because there's so much there for them to do.
Yes.
And they just leave it all on the table. Week after week after week, you start to think they're playing well. They win 8 of 11. Then these old problems start to creep up, and you're just wondering, have they learned anything? And then you start to wonder also, what are you going to do to change up the makeup of this team? Maybe make them – get them another veteran in here and help them get over the hump.
You talk about bringing in another veteran, and that's something a lot of people, Jerry, have discussed. So tell me, if the Wizards – tell me first, who would you bring in, and then how could the Wizards do it?
LeBron.
Oh, my gosh. You'd make everybody happy.
I mean, you just try to shoot for the stars. There's nothing that just makes great, you know, with the way you have to do things, especially when you're over the cap in the NBA and trades, it's kind of hard to go one for one and say they should do this. But I would tell you a couple things. Like, I think that, you know, a true point guard, better option, who can defend and change the tempo of a game as a backup, something that they just cannot find for whatever reason. It's like, you know, the curse of John Wall's backup or something. That's going to make them better. If they had another big off the bench who could do some things defensively and still step out and make a perimeter jump shot, that would make them better. You know, at this point, if they could just get rid of the last 2.5 years of Jan Mahinmi's contract.
Oh, my God,
which was, you know, rewinding, like, when you're at this level, every little thing matters, right? Giving Jan 4 years and $64 million, that handcuffs you.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, like, you know, imagine if you replace that with a piece who was as effective as, say, an Eric Gordon.
Right.
Like, that makes you so much better. Like, that's what $16 million should get you. It should get you a sixth man of the year candidate at bare minimum. And they couldn't do that, you know. And so you've got him at $16 million, and then I think Gortat, for what he makes, $13-14 million, is actually a great bargain.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got $30 million invested in a center, and you're not always happy with that position.
Right.
And now you've got Otto's max deal. And you're not, for one, he doesn't have a max player's mentality of I'm going to go out and get mine. And then number two, you're not utilizing him as best you can.
Right.
And so that's on Brooks somewhat. That's on John Wall somewhat. That's on the entire team. I mean, they know that guy can shoot the hell out of the ball. And they just won't, they won't force it. You know, I'm used to those days. You know, you go back and you hear Magic telling James Worthy, I'm just going to give it to you every time down the court. You
yeah.
never hear John Wall saying, look, this is your day, Otto. I'm going to get
right.
you 30 tonight. They
right.
need to
that's
have that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what you want to see. And so it's kind of hard with them. Like, on one hand, they haven't made fantastic decisions to make the best use of their payroll, which is sixth or seventh highest in the NBA, over $120 million.
Right.
On the other hand, they do have enough, even with the mistakes they've made, to be better. But they can't be better. And so in that case, you know, I mean, just anything. I mean, any guy who gets cut, you know, I like a good professional guy like a Tyson Chandler type would make this team a lot better. You need somebody who's got the respect that John and Brad will listen to him. And it
okay.
doesn't have to be the most productive player, but
right.
it does have to be somebody who could play 20 minutes a game. Like,
right.
again, they don't need some big dramatic score. They don't need a star. They don't need someone who's going to come in and give them and just, you know, change the chemistry and the direction of the team.
Right.
They just need another good veteran who people will listen to, who's got some guts and
mm-hmm.
who's got some professionalism.
Right, and I think that's what the Wizards had when Paul Pierce was in Washington, right? Because, I mean, even though he was older, he still provided solid points. And then, of course, he was older, so he couldn't play as many minutes, but the Wizards looked really good when they had the veteran in Paul Pierce, and you could tell that Bradley Beal, John Wall, and the rest of the team really learned from his leadership. So I'm like, you bring in that veteran, doesn't need to give you all minutes of the game, but at least, as you said, play 20 minutes. And I think, you know, the Wizards could be up to something because, of course, everyone here in D.C., Jerry, wants them to go all the way, right? He wants them to win the Eastern Conference Championship to get to the NBA Finals. So, I mean, I think it would take that third piece, hopefully, for them to get there. And then the other big news, Jerry, coming out with the Washington Wizards this week was about Washington Wizards center Marcin Gortat, who actually declared that he wanted to retire with the Orlando Magic, interestingly enough. Of course, he played with the Magic from 2008 to 2011. He averaged 3.7 points and 4.3 rebounds per game. He really made his mark during the Magic's 2009 finals run as the primary backup for Superman, Dwight Howard, and then Orlando traded him in December of 2010. And then he went to the Phoenix Suns before joining the Washington Wizards. His contract does expire at the end of the 2019 season, but just tell me on your thoughts about Gortat retiring. Can the Wizards fill that void, or is it too early to start looking that far?
Yeah, it's too early. I mean, when he says that he ultimately wants to retire, what does that mean? In 3 years, 4 years?
Right.
He didn't say, I want to go back to Orlando at the trade deadline and retire there. When I've talked to him, I mean, I think he thinks that he can play at a pretty high level for three more years.
Okay.
So you sort of take him through that contract and, you know, ultimately with Gortat, when his deal becomes an expiring deal,
mm-hmm.
I think that'll be the time where the Wizards are looking to make a move for their next center. And that's kind of it, unless he can get thrown into a big deal. You just don't know. But I think ultimately, if you're just looking at things, you know, in a non-creative perspective, that's the time that they're going to look to do something. And again, you know, you keep coming back to that there was a thought when they signed Jan, if Jan still had it, that
yeah.
there could be a handover, that Jan, the defensive-minded
yeah.
center who cuts to the basket, could wind up being the starter, and then you would trade Gortat for another piece, you know, maybe a really talented scoring wing who comes off the bench. But that option is out. And
right.
so now they got to figure, you know, right now, I mean, this team really couldn't function without Gortat, because the guy comes to play, he sets his screens, he doesn't complain too much about not getting the ball,
right.
and you know he's going to be there for 82 games. You're
right.
not going to miss any time.
He doesn't, right? He's I mean, he's really been consistent and solid for the Washington Wizards. So I'm like, yeah, I mean, Gortat, I don't think he gets enough credit, but he has been a crucial piece to the Washington Wizards. And now, Jerry, I want to transition over to Kelsey's Across the Nation segment and something that you probably watched this weekend, the NFL playoffs, where it's something that everyone is still talking about. Of course, I have to start with the Minnesota Vikings, who just won basically what I think is the most perfect and intense ending to a playoff game that many of us have ever seen and maybe will ever see. But then the playoffs have really been just interesting this year, because who would have ever thought, too, that the Jaguars really have been a fun team to watch this year and that they are still in the playoffs. And then we have backup quarterbacks leading the way in the NFL playoffs. We have Blake Bortles, who a lot of people have really underestimated, Case Keenum, and then, of course, Nick Foles, who are all still standing. But I want to go back to the Vikings game, Jerry. Did you watch the playoffs?
Yes, I did.
Okay, good.
And it's exactly what the NFL needed.
Yes.
After a subpar season.
Mm-hmm.
In which
and all the injuries.
And protest. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
It was,
I mean,
all
this
about
season
injuries
was
and protest.
I mean, that's all the storyline was, right? Every sports writer, Jerry, had that somewhere in the newspapers, and like week in and week out. And I'm like you. I mean, I think they needed this because it brought excitement back to the game. And I'm sure that people who even said that they weren't going to watch the game probably tuned in once they saw the craziness that happened, of course, with the playoffs this weekend. And I'm personally excited, Jerry, because the Minnesota Vikings, I don't know if you remember, but it's about 7:15 Sunday when a forgotten, really, fifth-round draft choice out of the University of Maryland by the name of Stephon Diggs, who is a Gaithersburg, Maryland native, which, of course, I'm from Montgomery County, so Jerry is probably the most hype person watching this game. When he caught that pass and took it 61 yards to the end zone to give Minnesota the victory, I mean, what was just going through your head when you were watching? I mean, did you even think they had a chance, or did you already think that the Saints were going to close out that game?
I didn't think there was any way it could end on a touchdown. I thought maybe they might lose their minds mm-hmm. and allow a deep pass that had them, you know, kick a 55-yard field goal try
right.
to see or something like that. But no, I never thought that the game was going to end in that way. I mean, it was Stephon Diggs is like one of the most underrated players in the league.
Yes.
And it's
yes.
good to see him get his shine, because he is impossible
right.
to defend. And now that he's got a quality receiver on the other side, that combination makes quarterbacks. I mean, just look at Case Keenum.
mm-hmm.
I mean, you could plug a lot of guys in there with what they have. And
right.
It would be something special. It's interesting to me, though, because as exciting as it was, wonderful mm-hmm. to see Jacksonville go to Pittsburgh and get it done.
Oh, my gosh, yes. And, who would have thought that?
And the Philly game was just this great defensive slugfest, comes right down to the end. And
right.
Julio Jones had been in a position where he could time his jump better. That's a heartbreaker for the mm-hmm. Eagles. But you look at it at the end of the day and you say, Nick Foles, Case Keenum, Blake Bortles,
right.
Tom Brady.
Who would have ever said that?
who is going to win the Super Bowl under that scenario?
Wow.
I cannot see. It's just, I mean, the difference in the quality between Brady, maybe the best quarterback of all time.
Right.
And these other guys, it's going to be. Unfortunately, it's going to be really difficult to keep him from winning another ring.
That's what's crazy, because, I mean, I'm sure when everybody, you know, was making their picks, you would have, I don't care, I need to see if somebody put all these teams in the NFL playoffs, because I will not believe them. The only team most of these people probably had, I'll put the Eagles, because, of course, when they had Carson Wentz, a lot of people were believing in them. But then with what happened, I mean, but then Tom Brady, of course, I mean, how can you ever count against Tom? Terrific. But Blake Bortles, I mean, what just a season he's had, and then now he's in the NFL playoffs, and interestingly enough, I mean, Football Outsiders has ranked him the most inconsistent passer in the league, people. So that just tells you, I mean, what we currently have in this playoffs. And, of course, I mean, taking on Ben Roethlisberger is no easy test. But now, as you said, I mean, Tom Brady, who some consider to be one of the best to ever play the game, he's the seventh most consistent passer in the league. So get that, the most inconsistent against the seventh most consistent. I mean, Bortles you can say everything about him. I mean, he's ranked in the top 10 in interceptions in each season of his four-year career. And then he'll face off against a quarterback who is just 0.2 points away from having the all-time lowest interception rate. I mean, it pretty much can't get polar opposite as that. I mean, Brady, what can he not do? And he's such a terrific passer. So that game, I actually hope it's interesting. I know some people are saying it's not going to be, but Jacksonville, I don't think you can take away from their defense, Jerry. If Jacksonville can keep up their defense and put Tom Brady in some uncomfortable situations, I'm going to say it'll be a close game. I'm not going to count anybody out. And then the Vikings, I feel like they have just the momentum rolling with them after what Stephon Diggs did. And I mean, Stephon Diggs, I don't think enough people give him credit. I mean, he's 24 years old. It's his third NFL season. I mean, and like I said, coming out of the University of Maryland, he played on a team where he really was the storyline his freshman year, and then his sophomore year, he really didn't get as much attention. And if you remember, that's when he actually broke his leg. And then his junior season, he actually entered early into the draft, a fifth-round pick. So he got his shine on Sunday. But then on the other side of it, Marcus Williams, Jerry, the New Orleans safety, who basically blew his deep man coverage. He tried to go for Stephon Diggs' legs. He missed, and then the rest was history. He was off to the races and took it to the house. Totally, I mean, a lot of talk has been around Marcus Williams. He tweeted, that he is not going to let one play define his career. He is a rookie. He's young. I mean, what do you think this does for him and the Saints team? Or, I mean, do you think he'll be able to bounce back for this? Did you like how he came back with the classy tweet after all the criticism he got? I mean, what are kind of your thoughts on Marcus Williams?
I feel really bad for him because what he gave that defense was a huge reason why the Saints were so much improved this year.
Yeah, he was good.
And for it to end like that, I mean, because the play was just so bad that you almost feel like the fix was in. It was just, I mean, he very bizarre angle, got all twisted up. It just looked incredibly awkward. There's no way that should have happened. So it's just it's a tough end to the year. I don't think that play has to define him, but he's going to have to be awfully mentally tough to come back from that. I mean, they always talk about cornerbacks, needing to have a short memory. Well, that's where it really kicks in now. And it's going to be harder than the way he talked about it, coming back from it. But I think that he's just too good of a player not to be someone that we look back 3 years from now and say, he's better for the embarrassing moment and for all the memes that have come out as a result of that.
Off social media. It's crazy all the memes that have been created. Just a poor kid. I mean, I'm like you. He can come back, Jerry, right? I mean, he just has to prove himself. He has proved himself, but in the social media age, I'm sure he's constantly checking Jerry's social media. And unfortunately, I think that can kind of mess, with your psyche and your mentality going into the next game. So I think all eyes will be on him next season. And then, of course, we'll all be looking forward to the next matchup where he faces off against Stephon Diggs again.
Yeah, hitting in all that, Minnesota is the best of the four teams remaining. They're the most balanced.
So you have them going to the Super Bowl.
They can run the football. We talked about their receiving core. Keenum has been solid. Their defense is right below Jacksonville's level.
Right.
And Mike Zimmer is just, a brilliant defensive mind. The problem is they're the Minnesota Vikings. And, maybe that one moment erases all the painful moments that they've had, but it would be just like the Viking to go to Philadelphia. Philadelphia, is undermanned. It does not have Carson Wentz, and this is their chance to host the Super Bowl, essentially. And somehow in the fourth quarter, they're likely going to blow it because they're the Minnesota Vikings. But I would love a scenario in which that team played the Patriots at home, even though it won't feel as much of a home game as it normally would. Mm-hmm. But I think that would be a great Super Bowl.
I think I'm like you. I think we'd be in for a good one. The Minnesota Vikings, it seems like at the end, something always happens, right? I mean, that's why I didn't want the game to come down to a field goal. I'm sure none of us did. But I could see it happening. So you basically have Vikings versus Patriots in the Super Bowl. I don't think I can even go against that because as much as I like the Eagles and Nick Foles has been solid, not the best, but solid, I don't think they're going to be able to get past the Vikings. And Jacksonville is just too hard to count against Tom Brady. So we'll keep an eye on that. Of course, it's the countdown to the Super Bowl that we've all been waiting for. But now I want to go to my biggest headlines in sports. And, I mean, most recently we celebrated Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day this past Monday, and of course the NBA, as it always does, they honored the late, great Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and as well as players around the league. We saw them wearing their special edition warm-up shirts that were made by Nike that featured some of the Pioneers' most iconic I Have a Dream speech quotes, and then Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, James Harden, Kelly Oubre here in D.C. They all had all these different themed sneakers that played tribute to the civil rights leader. And I bring this up because I think Dr. King's holiday is such an important day, and I continuously love how the NBA honors Dr. King's Day. But before I get into the NBA games, Jerry, I just want to know, I mean, what does Dr. King Jr. Day, you know, mean to you? And tell me, I mean, do you like how the NBA currently honors, you know, the late, great Dr. King?
Yeah, I think the NBA does a great job. I think I just love how they've embraced it. And I think the NBA is just fortunate to be in an era in which they have so many responsible players who can really articulate what Dr. King means to them today and can create a sense of mission. It's fun. I mean, anytime you're at an NBA arena, you really get that full experience on MLK Day of
right.
Of just what it's all about. It's just, it's very inspiring, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All of the city, I mean, Memphis does it extraordinarily well,
yes.
Which they have to, but
right.
Most every city just does a really nice job with it, and I think it's fun. I think it's very appropriate, and you know, I mean, really, when you think about it, for a national audience, the NBA season begins on Christmas Day.
Right.
And then MLK Day has become, you know, the second biggest showcase day. And I'm
right.
glad they put the Warriors and the Cavs
mm-hmm.
on that day as well. And so
right.
it's something that you can't ignore. When you look at the schedule now, you're looking for those matchups.
I mean, I'm like you. It's like, you know, it's going to be great games on MLK Day, which I think really does pay tribute, you know. And then, of course, they go above and beyond with the gear that the players wear through the warm-up shirts, through kind of being looser, and now players can do all types of sneakers for the holiday. And as you said, the Grizzlies, I mean, they have to do it the best, but they really do it the best. I love the jerseys they wore that were inspired by the bathroom sanitation workers' strike. And then the commissioner going with the NBAP, Executive Director Michelle Roberts, Jeannie Buss, and some others, you know, sharing that moment on the balcony the day before MLK Day at the motel where he was actually killed. I just thought that was so powerful. But everyone's talking about the games that happened on MLK Day. Of course, one of the bigger games was the Clippers win, where everyone's talking about this Clippers team. I mean, even though they were shorthanded, they were able to pull out their fifth consecutive victory by beating the Beard, James Harden, less Rockets, because, of course, the Beard was not there on Monday. But the man that had really stepped up, Jerry, was Lou Williams, who really continued his stellar play, 31 points, and then Blake Griffin. What an amazing game he had, 29 points, 10 rebounds, and 6 assists. But tell me, I mean, did that game capture your attention the most, the Clippers beating the Rockets, or which game did you like the most on MLK Day?
Definitely is the rivalry. You know, I paid most attention to the Cavs and the Warriors, even though I knew, you know, that game went almost exactly the way I thought it was going to go.
Okay.
You know, I'm a big fan of Doc Rivers because I covered the Orlando Magic back in the day when he was in his first head coaching stint. Great coach. Should be a candidate for coach of the year with you know, all the turnover the Clippers had, first of all, and then all the injuries that they've had so far this season. If that team makes the playoffs, Doc has to be a prime guy. I think everybody just assumes that it's going to be Brad Stevens, and that's
mm-hmm.
fine because they've had a dominant year. And you know, you lose your prize free agent within the first 6 minutes of the season.
Right.
So
it's heartbreaking.
So that, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's so yeah, I mean he deserves a lot of credit for what he's done. But if you look on the other end and everything that the Clippers have overcome, and they should be a team that should be 10 games below 500 right now, and they're playing good basketball. You have to give them a lot of credit. And Lou Williams absolutely should be on the All-Star team.
Yes. You know,
he might have
to
sweat it out for his last spot.
Mm-hmm.
But he absolutely should be on the All-Star team.
I mean, what a season he's had. I mean, MLK Day just provided so many good games. Of course, you talked about Cavs-Warriors. I'm like you. I expected the Warriors to win. I think the Cavaliers are still trying to find that consistency, even though they have all the playmakers. And the Warriors are just the Warriors. I mean, let's be real, Jerry. I mean, it's hard to count against the Golden State Warriors in any game. But staying on the basketball trail, I want to get into Markelle Fultz. And, I mean, everyone's talking about him. I'm sure you've seen it on social media. Of course, after he was sidelined because of his shoulder injury, he was out for basically over 2 months, and then he was back on the court practicing, but everyone is talking about his shot that many are saying that it's gone, it's lost, it can't come back, some people are saying. He was the number one overall pick in the 2017 draft. Before his injury, he shot 33.3%. He was going 9 of 27 from the field in just 4 appearances. But interestingly enough, Sixers coach Brett Brown said, I'm old and I've never experienced anything like this. I really haven't. He calls himself a shooting coach, and he vowed to help Fultz rediscover his shot. He said he plans to spend extra time with him at practice, and they've shielded him from reporters, which, of course, I'm sure everybody can understand why, because, I mean, they know what reporters are going to ask him. But just tell me, I mean, what are you thinking of what's going on with Markelle Fultz and why it seems like he can't get back into his shooting rhythm that he once had, of course, when he was a star at Washington?
You know, it's crazy. You hear the word, the yips. From time to time in baseball, you know, just a guy who just can't throw, you know.
Right.
I think it happened to Chuck Knobloch back in the day where he couldn't make the throw from second base to first base. You see it with pitchers from time to time. It seems like that's what's happened to him. You know, I think he had a legitimate shoulder injury, and he was trying to play his way through it. And now it's just something mental. I mean, he's got a hitch in his shot that's like Charles Barkley's hitch on the golf course, and it's just bizarre because if you've watched him develop at DeMatha, if you watched him, during his freshman season at Washington, one of the reasons he was such a coveted prospect was, I mean, he is a guy who can score from every level. You know, you kind of call him a four-level scorer. He can shoot the ball from deep. He's got the mid-range game. He can go to the basket, and he can finish among the trees. He can get to the free throw line, and he shoots a good percentage at the line. He is just a shell of that player now. And you can't put him back on the floor. You can't put him back on the floor until he shoots the ball like Markelle Fultz has shot the ball his entire life.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, at this point, it's just got to be some mental thing. And how do you help him overcome that? It's just, it's really unfortunate because I just love him as a basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought his rookie season would go like this.
Oh, my gosh. No, I mean, we all had such high expectations, of course. I mean, he is a DMV native, and he goes out to Washington, plays spectacular ball. And then, of course, as you said, we all expected big things, especially being on a talented Philadelphia 76ers team. And then we talk about his shot. And, you know, a lot of Sixers are saying, don't use that word bust, and I'm sure, I think it's way too early to use that word, but you say it's mental. So I take from you that you think if he can, you know, if he can overcome his own basically problems and struggles in his head, then he can come back, right? Like, you don't think this is the end of Markelle Fultz?
I don't want to go that far on someone who is so young,
mm-hmm.
and we're all looking at this from a bit of a distance, right?
Right.
We've just kind of seen the stories, and we've seen the video of his shot, and we've heard about his injury issues, and we've scrutinized the quotes of Brett Brown and others. So we don't really know all of the information. But what we see, you know, we can make an educated guess that there's a lot going on. But I just don't want to give up on the guy at this point.
He's young.
Because I've seen how fantastic of a player he is
right.
when he's right. And, I just want to give them a chance to get right. And the thing with the Sixers, you know, you want to talk about the run that they've been on. Like every one of their rookies is essentially redshirted. Ben Simmons didn't get to play his rookie year because of the foot injury, and then Joel Embiid didn't get to play his first two seasons. So they've been through a lot with their rookies, and they're still kind of made progress. So Ben Simmons, because he didn't play last season, didn't doom him to being a diminished player. And let's just see. Let's just see if you can get Markelle Fultz's body and his mind right. But I will say this. I do think it's over for him this year. I don't think we'll see him on the floor before at least summer league next year.
And I think that's the right decision. I mean, I think it's all about patience. And, of course, I don't think you want to rush him back on. I think Philadelphia has been doing pretty well, of course, without him. As you said, the players that they missed are back now, and they're playing some good basketball. Still a young team. So I'm like, yeah, I don't think we see the end of him. I think the end of the season. But I tell everybody, calm down, hold up. Markelle Fultz, I will say this on air, will be back. I really don't think it's the end because I know how hard of a basketball player he is. I mean, he's played his whole life for this moment. And I think, you know, hopefully next season we will see the best that he has to offer. Now I want to switch gears. I want to go to some big news that broke this week when a four-time Olympic gold medalist, Simone Biles, accused her former USA team physician, Larry Nassar, of sexually abusing her. Now, it was unfortunate because this is something that we've heard time in and time out, especially with the Me Too movement going on. I'm sure you've heard so many stories yourself, Jerry. But Simone Biles coming out, I mean, it just seemed like USA Gymnastics took another big hit, and it was the same doctor. I mean, her statement implied her abuse was similar to allegations made in lawsuits and public statements by more than 140 women who have accused Nassar under the guise of medical treatment, of probing and fondling with gloves, warning or permission. So, I mean, this coming out pretty much broke a lot of people's heart, I'll say, you know, because you don't want to hear about this happening to anyone. But the way she tweeted it out, you know, and said it's something that she's been dealing with and that has hurt her, you know, I think it touched a lot of people, unfortunately, into seeing how USA Gymnastics, unfortunately, has really seemed like they've been hiding this under the rug. I mean, Allie Raisman, who also came out and accused him, said they told her not to say anything. And then, of course, with Simone Biles coming out, she's another member of the Final Five who has accused him of abuse, along with Gabby Douglas, who came out, and then, of course, I said Allie Raisman. And then Michaela Maroney, who's another person that a lot of people should know. She's also won a gold medal, and she was a member of the 2012 Team USA Women. She's also come out and said it. So I just want to know kind of your overall thoughts on this whole situation. What were your thoughts, you know, when Simone Biles came out and said that she was also abused?
Well, you know, it just goes, anyone who's followed the Larry Nassar story has to just be sickened, right?
Yes.
And on so many levels. I mean, he was an extreme predator. Mm-hmm. But then just to allow him to get away with abusing so many women, the people that I'm most disappointed in are the people who just had to know something about this and swept it under the rug.
Right.
And I'm hoping that for USA Gymnastics, for Michigan State, for all the other sports affected, that this isn't over, that there needs to be more than just the predator. I mean, it's the people who, you know, we're talking about MLK Day.
Right.
And one of Martin Luther King Jr.'s big things was, you know, you can't sit in silence.
Yes.
You know, if you just allow things to happen bad in this world, you're just as bad as the people who are doing bad things.
Right.
And that's a classic example there. And, you know, you keep wondering, okay, all these high profile names come out and you just keep wondering, when is it going to get to the point where everyone is outraged enough to just go after everyone who contributed to this man continuing to be able to do that to these women.
Right.
And here's Simone Biles. I mean, that's about as big of a name as you can get in women's sports, not
right.
just women's gymnastics.
Right.
So hopefully there will be aftershocks and more people will pay the price. But at least we know with Larry Nassar, he will be in jail for the rest of his life.
Right, right. I mean, nothing good can come out of this, but I think that's at least what you know. He won't be able to hurt anyone else. Because it's just so unfortunate. It's so heartbreaking every time I hear it. But I think the best thing now, of course, is that it's something that can all be learned from. Make sure if you have young athletes, boys or girls, you know, make sure you're always asking about them, you know, if they feel uncomfortable, you know, what their coaches are doing. And parents, you know, if you can be at practices and stuff, please be there, because unfortunately, you know, we live in a world where you can't trust everybody, obviously. And, you know, you just want to make sure this stuff is not happening, because it's traumatizing to young kids that this is happening to. And, you know, it's something that they can never forget. But I'm glad to see that justice is at least starting to be served, you know, to these people involved. But I like to end my show on a more positive note, Jerry. I like to end my show with my Woman Crush Everyday segment, where today I'm excited to be honoring Erin Jackson, who became the third African-American athlete to make a U.S. Olympic speed skating team, and she's the first black woman to qualify for the long track competition. She's a Florida resident, and she finished her first run 39.22 seconds and clocked in at 39.04 in her second run. She told NBC Sports that she was surprised, actually, that she had made the squad. She's a former inline skater and roller derby athlete, and she shared her excitement of making the team on Instagram. I love that she also announced the start of a T-shirt fundraiser to pay for her father to watch her compete in South Korea. I mean, how great is that? She said, "Thanks a million to everyone who has supported me along the way toward achieving this dream. I'll do my best to make you proud this February." She qualified for the U.S. team last Friday when she came in third place in trials for the 500-meter race behind two former Olympians, and she's only 25 years old. So, of course, we wish her the best in the Winter Olympics coming up. And I'm just curious to hear your thoughts, Jeremy. What are your thoughts on Erin Jackson, kind of this historic feat that she's accomplished?
Oh, I can't wait to cover her. You know, I'm actually going to Korea for the game.
Oh, nice. Very
cool. I can't
wait
to see how she does. And it's interesting because this is probably the last run for Shawnee Davis on the men's side, who has meant a lot on the long track for African-Americans. And maybe she takes the torch and takes it even higher. I mean, maybe this is going to be the first of three Olympic Games for her, because she can compete now at 25 and maybe win a medal or two and be in her prime at 29 and maybe even have a swan song at 33. So I'm hoping that's how her career is going to go.
I'm wishing the best for her. I mean, it's so exciting. She's so humble. And like I said, I just love that she started a fundraiser to bring her dad to the games. I mean, I don't think it gets any better than that. So I hope, of course, that she reaches her goal and that her dad gets to go. I also wish you the best since you're covering the Olympics. But thank you so much, Jerry, for joining me today on Listen In with K&N.
Oh, anytime. My pleasure. I appreciate it.
Perfect. Thanks. And for everyone listening, that's a wrap for this edition of Listen In with K&N. I hope you had fun, learned something, and, of course, jumped in on the K&N bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every week for new shows that drop online at FoxSports1340AM.com and KelseyNicoleNelson.com. If that's not enough, the show is available for download on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support matter. Until later this week, enjoy the sports world, smile, and don't take your fantasy sports too seriously, because there's always another play.
Advertisement and sponsorship opportunities are now available for Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio, WHAP. Become a part of the hottest new sports talk show in the nation's capital, fueled by one of the largest national sports radio networks. Hosted by award-winning sports personality Kelsey Nicole Nelson, Listen In with KNN brings listeners the latest trending topics in sports and in entertainment each week. So if you're looking to maximize your brand's exposure alongside the best local and national sports coverage, plus special live editions of Listen In with KNN from venues around the region, email Kelsey at kelseynelson@foxsports1340am.com. For more information about Listen In with KNN, visit foxsports1340am.com. Follow Kelsey on Twitter at TheRealKNelson. You've been listening to Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio.